From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson, and today we are revisiting a series we originally aired in the spring of 2023 about the U.S. response to COVID-19. There's a film that was referenced a lot during the beginning of the pandemic, Contagion.
You ever seen anything like this before?
No. And it's still changing. It's figuring us out faster than we're figuring it out.
If you haven't seen it, the movie follows the spread of a highly contagious and deadly respiratory virus.
So we have a novel virus with a mortality rate in the low 20s, no treatment protocol, and no vaccine at this time.
That is correct.
The film is full of eerie parallels to the COVID pandemic. Infectious disease expert Jessica Malotti Rivera worked as a consultant on Contagion, and she says there's one part of the film that always stuck with her. Here's Jessica.
There's a line in the movie that we've now seen play out with COVID in real time. In the scene, actor Lawrence Fishburne is playing a CDC epidemiologist. He's sitting in a TV news studio being interviewed about the deadly virus, and he's asked a seemingly simple question.
Can you tell us to date how many people have died from this virus?
Very difficult. We're still working on confirming that number. There are 50 different states in this country, which means there are 50 different health departments, followed by 50 different protocols.
And then Fishburne's character shrugs. It's a nothing I can do about it kind of shrug. That moment in Contagion captured one of the biggest issues the CDC faced in collecting COVID data. We needed the most up-to-date numbers, but the CDC couldn't provide them because the agency was dealing with 50 different states.
50 different states in this country.
50 different health departments.
50 different health departments.
50 different protocols.
50 different protocols.
The U.S. Constitution makes it clear that states are in charge of public health. State governments, and not the CDC, have the primary authority to control the spread of dangerous diseases within their jurisdictions. When COVID hit, the federal government had no system set up to get COVID data from each state. Instead, the CDC said, if you want data, go to the states. They have the most up-to-date information. Essentially, the CDC told the American public, you figure it out. And some of us did. Starting in the spring of 2020, volunteers stepped up to gather data from every state and territory in the nation and share it every single day. It was called the COVID Tracking Project. I was one of those volunteers, and hundreds of people like me across the nation signed up to help.
There was so much volunteer energy, and we were putting in like 100% commitment, like to making this thing happen.
That's reporter Alexis Madrigal. He's one of the co-founders of the COVID Tracking Project. Data scientist Jeff Hammerbacher is another co-founder.
Before you knew it, we had, you know, competent people running like entire swaths of projects that kind of really organically formed.
And we started running data shifts 3 times a day.
And I think it was Amanda French.
Hello.
Just out of nowhere, Amanda just stepped up.
Okay, so my name is Amanda French.
And created this incredibly structured and rigorous recruitment and training effort.
The first thing people do when they join the project is to learn how to gather the data. Amanda French is a project lead who trains other volunteers. This is from one of her training sessions.
So the first thing you'll do, and it says this in the data entry instructions, you show up for a shift.
We would go through all the states.
All of the states and territories, which is 56 items.
And we would update all the numbers.
Volunteers would click on a state website.
For Alaska, this is a link that goes to the Alaska Department of Health.
Look on a page for COVID cases, deaths, basically any of the COVID data.
Open this page and get the data from it.
There's no standard way to report COVID data. Every state does it differently.
A lot of the data that we capture is spread out across multiple pages, government Twitter accounts, press conferences.
Not all states put data on their websites.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hello, everyone.
Thank you very much for tuning in.
So volunteers watched hours of press conferences.
This press conference is a vital tool for all of us to get through the crisis.
What I ask you to do, Minnesota, and you've done in a spectacular, very Minnesota manner, is to buy us time.
This situation is hard for any of us to believe. It's like we're all lost in a movie that we can't relate to in any way.
And they would listen for the day's COVID data.
335 cases of COVID
here in Arkansas.
604 cases.
We have now 76 cases in our state.
Of COVID-19 in Virginia.
They sometimes watched up to 40 a day. There was barely enough time to listen before the data was published by 7 p.m. Eastern.
Hospitalizations are at 48.
We have 17 who are on ventilators.
We have a total of 14 deaths.
31 deaths.
There comes a time when you begin to realize, you know, that you really are tracking deaths and people on ventilators and things like that. I actually always choke up when I talk about this, when I, you know, start to realize it. This is not just a data project. This is a project about human data.
Every day, we'd tally up the number of tests, cases, people hospitalized, and deaths from every state and territory in the U.S. We'd put it all into a Google spreadsheet. It took about 20 people 3 or 4 hours to do it. Alexis ran most of these data entry shifts.
And I would get done, and I kid you not, like, my armpits would be like high school kid with anxiety disorder, just soaked, like, to my waist, you know? Like, if a dog smelled you during those things, they would just eat you right away. They're just like, you're terrified. You could just smell the fear. The fear mostly came from this. We had a bunch of people we didn't know. We had complex data sets that we were merging into one, and we cared so much about getting it right.
Ryan Pinchansaram is a COVID tracking project volunteer. He was Obama's deputy chief technology officer, and he knows some people working on the response within the White House. Near the end of March, Ryan sends out an email. Alexis is on it. So is Amy Gleason.
I first met Alexis by phone or by Zoom in March.
Amy's trying to get any data she can about COVID for her boss, Dr. Deborah Birx. And some of her colleagues have been relying on data from the COVID tracking project. But even though the White House is desperate for good data, Amy is wary of talking to the COVID tracking project at The Atlantic. She can't tell if it's a journalism project or something else.
It was a little confusing because The Atlantic name was there, but also COVID tracking, and they seemed a little bit at odds with, like, exposing things that were happening and also, like, trying to help.
There's skepticism on both sides.
I had no trust in them up to that point. I basically felt like, you know, they are more likely to be politically influenced than the CDC people.
Alexis thinks that the CDC is being suppressed, as in they're not allowed to say what the real case and death numbers are.
A lot of our contacts with the federal government felt very fraught and, like, kind of dangerous for them and for us.
I was very careful talking to Alexis because I didn't want to be stepping over any lines.
Some of Amy's colleagues from the White House are trying to figure out why their data isn't matching up with the COVID tracking project data. So they all get on the phone together.
They were trying to figure out why their numbers were not matching up with ours.
Alexis is on the call, and so is COVID tracking project co-founder Aaron Kassane. Amy's team is asking questions about how the COVID tracking project gets their data and puts it together. The conversation really rattles Alexis and Aaron.
It became clear in that conversation they were relying on our numbers. I felt so physically sick after each of those realizations.
What we learned is that the CDC wasn't being forced to hide good data. They simply didn't have it.
I think the term is moral injury. It's really hard to deal with a sort of systemic betrayal by the organizations whose job it is to keep everyone safe.
The U.S. government seems to be relying on COVID tracking project data on a daily basis. And because of that, this work will last longer than anyone expected.
We'll get going in a little bit. California put out some numbers, and as soon as I finish doing that and tweet it, then we'll...
The next day, they hold the project's first all-hands meeting on Zoom. Alexis is finishing up the shift as it starts.
Give people, like, one more minute, and then we'll get going.
Before this, people had been working together on Slack across time zones. Almost everyone is seeing each other for the first time.
Don't worry if you don't have your video on. I know, like me, probably everyone else is sitting there in their sweatpants.
There's around 50 people on the Zoom. The COVID tracking project's been going for a little over 3 weeks now. It's turned into a full-time job for a lot of folks, including Jeff Hammerbacher. He knows how stressful the work has been on the volunteers.
Alexis and I have tremendous battle scars from when we messed up and there were like 1,000 times less people looking at the data. Now it's like, we're literally getting emails from like the Army Corps of Engineers telling us they're planning where to put their field hospitals based on this data. Like, we got that email today.
Alexis pulls up a slideshow that shows how widely the project is being used by news outlets. His mom has been keeping a spreadsheet.
We know that we're providing it to many, many, many newsrooms, everybody from the New York Times to local places like the San Antonio Express News.
Then Alexis drops what he and Aaron have just learned.
We know that we're providing it to sources inside government for the first few days of this project. I think we hoped the cavalry was arriving. There's no cavalry. There's nobody there. Every indication we have is that no one is coming to take this over for us.
People are exhausted. Some of the most active volunteers have already burned out and left the project. Aaron Kassane urges everyone to take care of themselves.
It's super important for everybody here to know and really believe that, like, when you need to tap out, you tap out. You are first. The humans on the project come first.
Zoom is telling me we're done, and any more questions, you can put them in the Slack.
Zoom's free 40 minutes runs out. By this meeting, the COVID tracking project had recorded more than 1,000 deaths. 10 days later, it would be nearly 10,000. Over the next year, we would document more than 500,000 deaths in America.
Next week on the COVID Tracking Project, Part 3, Americans find ways to live through a national shutdown.
I'm gonna need somebody to lean on.
But without data and facts, it gets harder to know what to believe about COVID.
I'm gonna treat this fruit. I'm gonna dump it in some soapy water here, disinfecting more liberally.
And without good data, it's also hard to know who's most at risk.
People wanted to believe the myth that COVID was the great equalizer and that race didn't matter, just as I think people want to believe that myth in general.
We'll tell you about the day the CDC finally starts releasing data and what that means for volunteers at the COVID Tracking Project.
That data showed up and I saw it had come in, walked outside my front door, and I fainted like a Victorian sensationalist novel character. Like, I walked outside. I didn't, like, fall down, but, like, my blood pressure just went away, and I had to, like, lie down on the sidewalk. The physical relief just hit me in the body that we were gonna get to put this down.
And we'll talk to the former director of the CDC.
We're about 60,000 public health workers in deficit. Our laboratory infrastructure across the nation has been underinvested in, and our data systems have been underinvested in. You can order a coffee by a QR code, but we were still at CDC getting results by fax from over 3,000 different jurisdictions.
That's next time on Reveal. Our lead producers for this week's show are Artis Chariscus and Kara Oler. Michael I. Schiller edited the show. Jessica Malati Rivera is the series host. Thanks to production assistants Max Maldonado, Corey Suzuki, and Arushi Sahejpal. Thanks also to Paul Lancor and Tim Olson at KQED Public Radio, where today's episode was recorded. This series was funded in part by Tableau from Salesforce. Nikki Frick is our fact checker. Victoria Baranetsky is our general counsel. Our production managers are Stephen Rascone and Zulema Cobb. Score and sound design by the dynamic duo, Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs, and Fernando, my man, Yo Aruda. That help from Catherine Steyer Martinez and Aisha Wallace Palomares. Our interim executive producers are Brett Myers and Taki Telenitis. Artists and Kara co-executive produced and reported this series. Our theme music is by Camarado. Lightning. Support for Reveals provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Jonathan Logan Family Foundation, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, the Park Foundation, the Schmidt Family Foundation, and the Hellman Foundation. Support for Reveal is also provided by listeners like you. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Letson, and remember, there is always more to the story.